Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Temura Daf Chof Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. We start today's shiur at the top line of Daf Chof Dalid, where we see a crown shape around the name Rav Hoshaya. Rav Hoshaya has this marking. In fact, this was a marking that we started in our previous shiur on Daf Chof Gimel, where we featured this shape, the crown shape, as a situation of setting aside two of something for one to serve as achrayas. So on Daf Chof Gimel Amid Beis, you may have noticed, and you can always scroll back to Rabbi Ami, who spoke about someone who set aside two piles of money, one of the two serving as a backup for the other one if anything should happen to it. In this case, Rav Hoshaya talks about the setting aside of two animals as sin offerings, one to serve as a backup for the other if something should happen. Omar Rav Hoshaya, Hamafu shtei chatois lachrayas miskapir ba'achas mehen. He will use one of the two as his source of atonement, the chaverta roya, and the other one will be set out to graze till it develops a blemish. At that point, you would then use the money upon its sale for the purchase of sacrifices. Ali Bodeman, the Gemara wants to know, according to which Tanaic authority does Rav Hoshaya say this point? We see a series of triangles with colored in tips. These are explained in the outside margin, where we featured under our Nosei heading, the Nosei being the topic. We've written Dino Shel Rav Hoshaya Hamafrish Shtei Chatos Achrayas Miskapir Becho Mehen. He chooses one, the Chaver Toro, and the other one is set out to graze. The Mivneh, which is our structural note, we've featured a triangle with the colored in tip. Alibo Deman Omar Rav Hoshaya Es Dvorav. Here the Gemara wants to know according to which Tanaic authority did he say his point. So we now continue in the Gemara, bearing in mind for all of those who have tuned in today for the first time that we are essentially citing information that we have learned on previous Dapim. So in order to fully appreciate what we are discussing, it would be quite important to be familiar with those sugyas, those sections of Gemara that we've already learned on these topics. So the Gemara is asking, according to which Tanaic authority did Rav Hoshaya say his particular ruling? Ilemo alibo derabonon, if you were to say that it is according to the Tanoim known as the Rabbonon, hashto ma hamafrish liibud amri Rabbonon lav ki ibudami. Mind you, if you set aside a replacement animal for a sacrifice that was actually lost, they say that that animal that you set aside is not itself considered as something lost. La'achrayas mibaya, if you set aside something at the outset for a backup purpose where nothing was lost, then all the more so we won't consider it something that is considered a loss. When we speak about a loss, there is another shita that said that when you set aside something for an animal that was lost, there is the potential for it having to die, falling under the category of chatos hamesos, which is a subject, of course, that we've discussed recently. According to the Rabbanan, though, even in a more severe situation where you set aside an animal to serve as a replacement for something that is lost, if you choose to, let us say, gain atonement through the lost animal once it's found, well, the thing you set aside, that will not die. Here, certainly, where you set aside two at the outset, the one that you don't use is not going to die. Elo Aliba de Rabbi Shimon. Maybe Rabbi Shaya is saying his halacha within the context of Rabbi Shimon's opinion. But that can't be either. Ha'amar Rabbi Shimon, Chamesh Chatos Mesos. Rabbi Shimon rules that there are five examples of sin offering that are set out to die. And one of them is a sin offering where the owner achieved his atonement. So one of, in this case, once the owner achieves his atonement through one of the sin offerings, so the other one is now considered a chatos shemesu baleo, and it will have to die, not graze. Elo aliba de Rebbe. Rather, Rabbi Shaya is saying his aloha within the context of Rebbe's opinion. Ki omar Rebbe, when did Rebbe say that the chatos will die? Be'ibud, that's in a situation where it was lost, where you set aside a replacement animal for a chatos that was lost. So Rebbe says that kind of animal will, when you don't use it for atonement, it will die. Avol ba'achrayis lo, but in the context of two animals set aside at the outset, not involving any case of loss of a lost animal, so Rebbe will concede that there is no death that is due to the unused chatos. We now have a new geometric form. You can see it's a trapezoid, or we fondly refer to it as the volcano shape. In the outside margin under our Mivne heading, you can see this is labeled as kushios. These represent questions. Tanan, we present a Tanaic source that lasts four lines. As you can see, it's in a frame, as we frame all Tanaic sources in Gemara markings. Hamafrish chatos v'harehi balas mum. Someone set aside an animal to serve as a sin offering, and it turns out to have developed a blemish. Mochro umevi acheres tachtel. So you sell it and bring a replacement animal. Buy a replacement one. Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon Omer, im korva shnia koidem shenishchato rishona. If the replacement sin offering was offered as a sacrifice before the blemished animal that had been sold was slaughtered in the house of, let's say, the purchaser. Tomus, the purchaser is now going to have to set the animal that he bought, thinking that he would slaughter and use as meat. No, it's going to have to be set aside to die. Shekvar kipru baleo, because you have a situation where the owner, the original owner, achieved atonement. The assumption is the Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Karebi Svirale. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon that said that it shall die, the animal that the purchaser bought, the original sin offering that had developed a blemish, will die, is saying his opinion in accordance with Rebbe. The Afilu Bachrayas Nami, and the assumption is that Rebbe would say his din that there is death due to the unused sin offering, even in a case where it was set aside to serve as a backup, a guarantee. Lo, the Gemara says that this assumption to tie Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon in to Rebbe and say that the opinion of Achatas Shemesa will extend even to the case of animals set aside to serve as a backup, as Achrayas, this assumption is not so. Dilmo Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon Kavua Svirole. Maybe Rebbe Elazar Rebbe Shimon represents an opinion like that of his father, namely Rebbe Shimon, Diomar Chamesh Chatos Mesos, that the sin offerings will die under all circumstances. There is a Rashi that we would like to look at. We will see this Rashi on the third line from the top. Karevi Svirole, Diomar Avuda Bishas Hafrosha Mesa. An animal that was lost at the time a replacement animal was set aside, that animal will die. Mishum Kipru Baaleo Becheres. Because of the owner having achieved atonement through another one. When you set aside two animals, one to serve as a guarantee, So that what the Gemara tried to do in the question stage, where the Gemara said, is presenting a situation where there was a parallel between setting aside two animals for achrayas, one to serve as backup for the other, and this opinion of Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon, where you had an animal that was set aside at avura b'shas hafrosha, means you had an animal that was lost, and something set aside as a replacement when it was lost. But eventually, the lost animal was found, and they were still both alive, and you chose one of them to serve as atonement, so the other one shall die. So the fact that they were both around at together at a certain point, that would be the parallel to the case of two animals set aside initially, one to serve as achrayas for the other. So that if you were to say that Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon is related to Rebbe's opinion, and you see that Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon spoke about the replacement animal, or the causing the other one to die, same thing in the case of setting aside two animals for achrayas. However, the Rashi goes on. Let's continue in the Rashi where we left off. Karebi Svirolei, the Machmir, the Omar Mafrish Li'ibud Ka'ovud Domi, Ushmamino, the Afilu Hecha Deleka Ibud, even where there isn't a loss, Kagon Hacha, the Lo of the Harishona, where the first one wasn't lost, Ela Bachrayas, Shek Shehumimo Harishona, Hifrish Osa, in the case that we saw in the Tanaic source with Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon, someone had set aside a korban chatos, well, and it developed a mum. So he set aside another one, a replacement one. So you could see at that stage that there is the replacement one is being used as a backup for the one that became a baal mum. Very similar to the case of setting aside two animals, one to serve as a backup for their, which we called Hifrish Lachrayas. And you saw that Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon said that the one that wasn't used will die. And we attempted to parallel him to Shitas Rebbe, thereby making Rebbe, who said Hifrish La'avud is Mesa, would go even to so far as to say the one that you don't use is going to be Mesa. But the Gemara eventually rejected this and said that Rebbe Elazar Reb Shimon is not a representative of Rebbe's opinion, but rather that of his father Rebbe Shimon. Continuing in the Gemara, Tanan. This very brief Tanaic source is really an excerpt from the same source we've seen a couple times in the past regarding the Yom Kippur goats that are set aside. One is they have two goats upon which lots are drawn to determine which one is going to be used as a sacrifice, which we call the Soyer Lashem, and the other one called the Soyer Lazozel. It is the other one sent out to a cliff whereby it's pushed off and its death atones for the sins of Israel. And in the event that, let us say, the one that was supposed to be sent out to the cliff, it actually died before it was sent out, so we have to get a replacement for it. And in order to determine which one will be its replacement, two more goats are brought. Lots are drawn. One of them is determined to be the Soyer Lazozel, so that obviously is the one that you needed. But at the same time, you now have two Soyer Lashems, two of them which had been labeled as being the public goat offering that's offered on Yom Kippur and whose blood is sprinkled in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Well, you can only bring one. So what happens with the other? So the source says, "Lefi she'ein chatos tzibor mesa," where you have the used one. let's say you use the more we'll talk about using the first one and the replacement one, the one that was brought is the second pair with the second drawing of the lots, that's second Soyer Lashem, which is not going to be used. Well, it says in this source that since it's a public offering, so it does not die. But we infer from this, Ha di Yochid Mesa. If it would be a parallel situation on a private level, so it would die. Since you're not using it, and it was designated as a korban chatos, it will die. V'yomar Rav Balei Chayim Eino Nitchin. Rav says that live animals are not rejected, and therefore, Keshu Miskaper, when he does achieve his atonement, or the public achieves their atonement on Yom Kippur, B'sheni Shebezug Rishon Miskaper, they will use the first of the two So'ir Lashems as their atonement, v'idoch havelei kemafrish lachrayas, and the other one is like the case that we're dealing with over here, Rav Hoshaya's case, where you had set aside, you had two, one serving as a backup for the other, v'kotoni, and we're inferring from what we had above, the yochid meso, that had it been a private situation, it would have died. Now you'll notice we dashed underlined keywords, lachrayas and meso. This is in contrast with Rav Hoshio's ruling, where we also dashed underline on the third line from the top, where he said, Chaverto Roe, the other one, the one that you don't use, will be set out to graze. Here, from this Tanaic source and its inference, we are establishing that the one that you do not use, which was also set aside as a form of a backup, it will die. The Gemara response. Rav l'tamei. Now, Rav said that Balei Chayim Eino Nidchin, and you have to use the first, the original So'ir Lashem in that Yom Kippur story. Well, Rav is l'shitoso, is according to his own reasoning, the Omar Mitzvah Barishon, that there's an expectation, there's a commandment to use the first one, so that when you brought the second pair in order to figure which one would be your Soyer Lazozel, which is the one that you really needed, the other one, the other Soyer Lashem, is like a case of Mafrish Le'ibud. In other words, you know at the outset that you're not going to use that second one. So it's as if you set it aside as a loss. And that's different than the case of setting aside two chatos, where you don't know which one you're going to use. That's a less severe situation, and as a result of that, the one that you eventually do not use is not going to die. As a result of that, as a result of this analysis, so we don't have any questions on Rav Hoshaya. Rav Hoshaya spoke about Mafishtei Chatos Lachrayas, and the Yom Kippur story more closely resembles a case of Mafrish Le'ibud, setting aside something in a loss situation, or for a loss, that will die. Tani Rav Simi Bar Ziri Kamei de Rav Popa. Rav Simi teaches the following Tanaic source. And before we go further, we glance at the outside margin under our No Say heading, Shitos Rebbe Rabbanon Be'aveda. We'll see their opinions in the case of a sin offering that was lost and a replacement one was set aside. So we have two time periods, Bishas Hafrosha and Bishas Kapora, where the original one was lost at the point in time that I set aside a replacement one, or the original one remained lost, not just momentarily, but it remained lost even till the point that the replacement was used and actually sacrificed and offered. Now, the Gemara. So we have the Tanaic source, two parts to it, which we've broken down with Roman numerals 1 and 2. Avda b'shas hafrosha. An animal was lost at the time when a replacement one was set aside. And then the lost one was found before atonement was achieved. And then, let us say, you use the replacement one. L'Rebbe Mesa, the one that was lost but found, will die. L'Rabbonon Tir'eh, the one that was lost but found before atonement, it's set out to graze. Avda b'shas kapora, if you had an original sin offering that got lost, and it remained lost till after the point in time that the replacement one was used for atonement, that it was slaughtered and sacrificed, and only then you found the lost animal. Le Rabbonon Meso, Le Rebbe Roya. Now, as the source appears, the opinion switched around. But this is very difficult to understand as is. This was taught by Rav Simi in front of Rav Papa. Omar Lei, Rav Papa reacts with a question. He says, Kal v'chomer. Says, Kal v'chomer logic would lead us to a totally different conclusion. Uma avudo b'shas hafrosha. De Amri Rabbonon Roya Omar Rebbe Mesa. Mind you, in the case of something that was lost, but found before the owner achieved atonement, the Rabbonon say graze, and Rebbe says the lost one that you don't use will die. Avuda b'shas kapora, the Rabbonon mesa, where you have a more serious situation, where if something is lost and remains lost till the owner achieves atonement through a replacement one. The Rabbonon Mesa, here the Rabbonon will concede that when you find the lost one, it is set out to die. The Rebbe lo kol shekein, wouldn't Rebbe all the more so say that it shall die? Just to review that point in a succinct fashion, in a lighter case, Rebbe says it will die. In a more severe case, certainly Rebbe should say it shall die. Ela tani hachi. Rather, teach the source thusly. Avuda, if you had a sin offering that was lost. Bishas hafrosha, it was lost when a replacement animal was set aside, but found before the owner achieved atonement. Le Rebbe Mesa, Le Rabbonon Roya. According to Rebbe, since it experienced loss, it experienced being lost, well, it's going to have to die, even though it's found before the owner achieves atonement. B'shas Kapora, Divrei HaKol Mesa. If the original animal was lost and remained lost till after the owner achieved atonement through a replacement one, then everyone will agree that when it's found, it will die. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Omer v'chule. We saw Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, who mentioned that if a person had purchased a blemished chatos, and it remained around in the possession of the purchaser till after the original owner achieved his atonement through a replacement sin offering, then the original blemished sin offering that the purchaser has, he won't be able to benefit from. It'll have to be set aside to die. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a source that has three points of information that all concern something called margilin. So, a word about margilin first. What is this? Margilin is a method of removing the skin of an animal, skinning an animal, retaining the skin in a complete form. As opposed to standard skinning of an animal where a long slice is made from head to tail down the middle of the animal, and thereby the skin is removed. Here, there's a process of removing the skin, starting from its feet and keeping it whole. The reason for one wanting to do this is that such a skin eventually could be inflated. It'll end up looking like a float, but it's used as a bellows. And such a skin was actually quite expensive if one is successful in skinning it whole and eventually making such an item. the topic heading that we have for this piece of Gemara on the outside margin, Ein, under our No Say heading, Ein Margilin B'Yom Tov B'Vechor B'Psula HaMukdashim. One does not do this process on Yom Tov. There is a great deal of effort that is expended in doing such a thing, and even though one is allowed to slaughter an animal on Yom Tov for food purposes and remove the skin in order to be able to eat the meat, but one cannot remove the skin in this fashion on Yom Tov. The Gemara will tell us because of the extraordinary trouble that's needed, and Yom Tov is not a day, holidays are not the time one is to expend energies for non-food related matters. And likewise, not to do this process with regard to a firstborn male animal that's offered as a sacrifice, a b'chor, nor is one to do this with regard to sacrifices that became unfit, which we call psulei hamukdashim. So now our Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source. Number one, Ein Margilin B'Yom Tov. Kayitzibo Ein Margilin B'Vechor. And number three, V'lo B'Psulei Hamukdashim. So, Bishlamo, I understand that we don't do margilin, full skin removal, b'yom tov, on a holiday. The kotorach tircha de lo chazile. He's investing energy and trouble in something that's not fit for yom tov itself. It's not yom tov related. Elo b'chor ma'antano. But as far as the prohibition of doing margilin with a firstborn male animal, which is something that is given to a Kohen, and in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, if it did not have a blemish, it would be brought as a sacrifice. With that little background in regards to Bechor, the Gemara now asks, Elo Bechor man Tano. Who is the author, which Tano would say that there is a prohibition of doing margilin to a bechor? You'll notice with our markings, we feature with a little house marking and colored in tip the expression man tano, where the Gemara is asking who is the tano. The Gemara will ask this also with regard to law number three in this source. So here, what about the bechor? Who would say there's a margilin restriction with regard to a bechor? Omar Rav Chisda, Beis Shammai Hi. It is in accordance with Beis Shammai, Domer Bechor, B'Kedushasei Koi. It is in accordance with Beis Shammai that says that a Bechor, a firstborn male animal, even once it develops a blemish, it still is considered to maintain a high level of sanctity. And that high level of sanctity will create this restriction in skinning it in such a way. Disnan Beis Shammai Oimrim Lo Yimne Yisrael Im HaKohen Al HaBechor. Yisrael, a non-Kohen, is not allowed to join with the Kohen in eating and partaking of the Bechor, which is a gift to the Kohen, even in the event that the Bechor had developed a blemish and wasn't even brought as a sacrifice. Let's take a look at Rashi across from here. Lo yimne Yisrael im hakoyin lechol im hakoyin botzer b'chor bal mum sheshach de koyin. Israel cannot join together with a Kohen in his eating of a blemished firstborn animal that the Kohen slaughtered. Almo afalgav the humum, even though it developed, the b'chor developed a blemish before it was sacrificed, before it was slaughtered, that is, b'kedushasei koi, it retains its original high level of kedusha. Hilkoch ein margilin bo, therefore we do not skin it in this margilin fashion. The domi ke'avoida b'kodshim, u'ke'uvdin d'chulin. It gives the impression of one working with holy items, and it is considered a demeaning task or a demeaning practice with regard to something that otherwise is holy. Continuing in the Gemara, after establishing that halacha number two conforms to Beis Shammai's approach to Bechor, which states it a Bechor, even after it develops a blemish, is still considered a high, having a high level of sanctity. Therefore, we don't skin it in this way. Number three, Psulei Hamukdoshim Mantan, who would say that with regard to general sacrifices that became unfit as a result of blemishes, do we not practice Margilin even with regard to those? So Mantana, who would be the author of that? Omar Rav Chisda, Rebbe Elozer Rebbe Shimon Hi. This is in accordance with Rebbe Elozer Rebbe Shimon. And this is the Rebbe Elozer Rebbe Shimon that we had already made mention of before with regard to the sin offering that developed a blemish and was sold, and a replacement one was offered, and that was done while the original blemished one that had been sold is still alive. And we saw that the purchaser won't be able to use this blemished chatos that he bought. The source begins here. Desani hoyu lefon of shtei chatos. A person had two sin offerings in front of him. Achas tmim of achas balas mum. One blemished and one unblemished. Tmim o tikra, the unblemished one shall be offered. And should we point out? We point out that the blemish developed before he had set aside a replacement one. So he had an original korban chatos which developed a blemish. Then he set aside this replacement one. And we're telling you now that the unblemished one is offered, and the baal mum, the blemished one, is redeemed. Nishchato baal asmum, when the blemished one is eventually slaughtered. If it's slaughtered ad shelo nizrak doma shel tmim umuteris, if it's slaughtered, we'll say quickly before the sprinkling of the blood of the unblemished sin offering is offered, so then everything is fine and good. The slaughtering of the blemished one was prior to a point in time that the owner achieved his atonement. Misha nizrak doma shel tmim. If a person, let's say, waited for the owner, the original owner, to achieve his atonement, and only then decided to have the blemished one slaughtered, asura, the purchaser of the blemished animal won't be able to benefit from it. He waited too long. Reb Elozer b'Shimon Omar, afilu boser ba'al asmum b'kedera. V'nizrak doma shel tmimo. Reb Elozer b'Shimon goes very far and says that even if you have a case where the blemished one may very well have been slaughtered on time, it was slaughtered before the owner achieved atonement. However, the meat is still around. You have the meat of the baal mum in a pot. In other words, as we said, you slaughtered everything early. You did almost everything. You finished everything up to eating it. But the meat is still around in a pot. And then the nizrak doma shel tmimo. And then the owner achieves atonement. So the owner achieves atonement at a point in time when the meat of the blemished animal is still around. Yoytzu l'beis ha-sreifa. The meat is to be taken out to be burnt. So we see this opinion of Rebbe Shimon says that even though the blemished one had been redeemed and its animal was slaughtered, the meat still maintains a certain high level of sanctity, so much so that it is sensitive to the atonement or lack thereof of the owner. Therefore, regarding the issue of Margilin, also, even though you're talking about a sacrifice that had been redeemed, it had been slaughtered, it still maintains this relatively high level of sanctity, which prevents us from allowing margilin. The Gemara asks, V'Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda, you notice his name had been circled above. He was explaining who was behind halachas number 2 and 3 in the source. We also noticed that he said that 2 was according to Beis Shammai, and 3 was according to a different Tana, Rav Elozer Rebbe Shimon. Here the Gemara asks, Rav Chisda lukma idi v'idi ke Beis Shammai. Why doesn't Rav Chisda establish both 2 and 3, namely 3 as well, like Beis Shammai? You'll notice we have this double underline with dots in it so that you can see On the next line, the Gemara will ask a very similar question with regard to the next point. So why doesn't Rav Chisda set up 2 and 3 like Beis Shammai? Or more accurately, why doesn't he say that 3 is also like Beis Shammai? Answer, Dilmo ki amri Beis Shammai bevachor. The Kedushose Meirechem, maybe Beis Shammai's restriction is only with regard to a Bechor because of the fact that it's sanctified already at the time of birth. Avopsum Doshim, lo. But standard sacrifices that aren't sanctified from their time of birth, they are sanctified at some later point in their life when an owner of an animal decides to sanctify it. So maybe because of this difference, and we'll say even like a lesser level of seriousness in so far that it's not sanctified so early, there maybe Beis Shammai would not say that there is a Margilin restriction. The Lukma, the Gemara asks, Edi, Kareb Lezer B'Shimon, why doesn't Rav Chisda set up even halacha number 2 as well as 3 like Rav Lezer B'Shimon? The Gemara answers, Dilma ki Yomar Rav Lezer B'Shimon b'psul mukdashim. Maybe Rav Lezer B'Shimon said his point, whereby he assigns a high level of sanctity, as we saw in the source, and as Rav Chisda claims with regard to Margilin, only with regard to psul mukdashim, and not Bechor. Why? The alimi lemitbas pidyonon. They have, alimi means strength. Because of their high level of sanctity, they are able to be redeemed. The sanctity is strong enough that it can grab upon redemption money. Avol b'v'chor lo. B'chor, we know, is something that cannot be redeemed. And maybe that's a reflection of its lower level of sanctity. And as such, since it's with regard to pidyon, it would be considered having a lower level of sanctity, so there would be no Margilin restriction. The Gemara now asks, Rav Lezer Rav Shimon, Lesley Hodisnan, does he not hold from the following teaching? Kol Psule HaMukdashim, sacrifices that were found to be unfit, they developed a blemish. We tell you that, we know that they're redeemed. And you know what we do with the money of those Psule HaMukdashim, the redemption money? We buy other sacrifices, so that we'll say that Beis Hamikdash is the ultimate beneficiary of Psulei Hamukdashim. Well, the rule regarding Psulei Hamukdashim and what happens when they are redeemed, Nishchotin Be'itlis, they can be slaughtered after they are redeemed. They can be slaughtered in a butcher shop in Nimkar Be'itlis and sold there. They're sold in a butcher shop in this public fashion. V'nishkolin Belitra, and be put on a scale and be weighed, which is all something that at a certain level of looking at things, you're treating the psul mukdashim as common meat. You're sort of compromising their honor, if you will, by treating it so publicly and so commercially. But you know why we do that? We do that because when meat is sold like that, it will fetch a higher price. So that when you have the owner of a psul mukdashim, he will have an incentive to offer a lot of money for its redemption because he knows he will be able to make more money when eventually he slaughters it and sells it commercially. So being that he knows he stands to profit, it will motivate him to offer more money for its redemption. So that when you have, we'll say, incentives for owners to profit, they will pay more money for its redemption, and as because of this, eventually the Beis HaMikdash benefits from the higher redemption level that the owner redeems it. Alma, so the Gemara goes on to say, Kevon de Shoris lay Tofi the Zovin. Since we allow the owner to sell the Psulei HaMukdashim meat commercially, which we said is at a certain level of compromising its dignity, but nevertheless, since we allow this compromise of dignity, which eventually lead the owner to make more money from the meat that is sold, he, the owner in turn, will initially redeem it at a higher redemption rate. Being that that's the case, why don't we do the same thing with regard to Margilin? Allow the owner to do the Margilin process to Psul Mekdashim, knowing that selling a full skin, a complete skin, is an expensive item. So the owner knows that he'll be able to make a lot of money from that. So wouldn't that serve as an incentive for him to redeem it for even more money, set aside more redemption money, and the Beis HaMikdash will benefit all the more? So just like we were compromising the dignity of the Psulei HaMukdashim by allowing their sales in butcher shops and weighed out as you would any common meat, all with the goal of providing an incentive for an owner to initially redeem it, setting aside more redemption money because of the owner's knowledge that he will be able to make even more profit later on. Why not compromise our dignity sensitivities and allow Margilin, knowing that the owner will figure or calculate that he'll be able to make a lot of money from the skin that he skins in whole? Omar Rav Mori Breid Rav Kahana. Rav Mori explains that true Margilin, a Margilin skin, is worth a lot of money. However, in order to do that, practically speaking, you have to shred the meat. You won't be able to sell or achieve full cuts of meat, regular butcher cuts of meat, because in struggling to remove the skin, keeping it whole, you actually ruin a lot of the actual animal meat. Mashimashbiach bor, whatever you gain in the more expensive skin, pogain babosar, you lose in the meat, so that there is an actual net loss in value, so that the Margilin wouldn't motivate an owner to set aside a lot of money for its redemption, knowing that he'd be allowed to do Margilin. But Ma'arova Mishmei de Rabbi Ovin, in Ma'arova in Eretz Yisrael, they say in the name of Rabbi Ovin that we won't allow Margilin b'nei shenira ke'oved avoida b'kotshim. Rashi, toward the bottom of the page, shenira ke'oved b'kotshim, that you're making a bellows from the animal's skin. The avoda mamish vade lohavi. It's not actual working with behemas kochim, with a sanctified animal. Dein avoda leachar misa. There's no such thing as working with an animal after it's dead. Avol nira kavoda. By keeping the skin intact and whole, it gives the impression that you're working with the animal. So that is a problem that is so important, such a major consideration, that tells us you cannot make a bellows from Suleha Mukdoshim. Number three, Rabbi Yossi Bar Oven Omar, Gzeiro Shemo Yigdal Mihem Adorim Adorim. We're afraid that if you are allowed to eventually skin an animal in the Margilin way, the owner will be deterred from slaughtering it quickly, and rather keep it around to raise herds, raise many offspring from this animal. And we glance at Rashi, Adorim Adorim, the Shorasei Lahargil, if we allow a person to do Margilin to a Psule Hamukdoshim, to a blemished sacrifice, Mashi Lahu Velo Shachit, he won't slaughter it, and he'll leave it around and won't slaughter it, Ad Shiz Damnu Lo Napochim, and until he eventually finds customers. The Napochim are blacksmiths. These are people that would use a bellows. And the Osi Ligadil Adorim, he'll come in the meantime to raise herds of animals. The Osi Lidei Takolas Gizo Vavoido, and by the longer an animal stays around, the greater the chances are you'll come to shear it or work with it. Even after their redemption, one is still usher to, one is prohibited from working with it or shearing it. So that this last opinion says we will prevent the Margilin, thereby deterring him from keeping the animal around till he finds a customer for the complete skin. So at this point then, we finish the fourth perek of Tmurah, turning now to Omid Beis, Chokdal Omid Beis, which is also the beginning of the fifth perek of Tmurah. Before learning the Mishnah, we glance at the outside margin under our No Say heading. The topic heading reads, Hafkoas Kedusha Mibachor Kodem Shenola, the removal of the sanctity of a firstborn before it's born. Now, technically speaking, maybe more accurately say than removing the sanctity, it would be to say prevention of the sanctity of a firstborn from ever setting in, because a Bechor gains its sanctity only upon birth. We will be featuring here a situation of preventing the sanctity from setting in, the firstborn status, the Bechor status, from setting upon this animal eventually when it is born. Ketzad me'arimin al ha'bechor. What technique? Me'arimin literally would mean something, would mean a trick. But here we have someone that is interested, we'll say, in it not becoming a bechor. Rashi says lahafkiyo mikayin ulafrisha lechavaso. This owner. Of an animal that is hasn't given birth yet to any offspring, this owner has an interest in keeping the offspring from being given to a kohen, which would be the case if it was a bechor. So how could this be accomplished, this undoing of bechor status of the eventual newborn? Mavkeres shohoisa muberes. Mavkeres is an animal, a mother, that has not given birth to any offspring yet. And it is now pregnant. Omer. So the owner says, Ma shebemeel shelzu im zocher oila. That which is in the womb of this mother. If it is a male, then I am declaring it right now to be an ola sacrifice. Yolda zocher yikrav ola. If it then gives birth to a male, it will be offered as an ola. In other words, the owner will take it and bring it as his own sacrifice. He won't give it to a kohen as a gift to a kohen. The im, and now he goes on to declare, the owner, we have quotation marks indicating the owner's speech. The im nekeva. If it is a female, zivchei shlomim, I am declaring it to be a shlomim sacrifice. Yolda nekeva, tikrav shlomim. If it actually bears, if this mother bears a female offspring, it will be brought as a shlomim sacrifice. Another possible declaration, im zocher oila v'im nekeva zivchei shlomim. If male, then I want it as an ola. If female, I want it as a zivchei shlomim. Yolda zocher unikeva, then, and if the mother gives birth to male and female offspring, hazocher yikrav oilo v'nikeva tikrav shlomim, the male is offered as an ola sacrifice, and the nikeva as a shlomim, the nikeva, the female, as a shlomim sacrifice. Yolda shnei zochorim, if the animal gives birth to two males, echad mehem yikrav oilo, one he will offer as an ola, vasheni yimocher will be sold lachayve ola to other people that have an ola obligation. The dom of chulin and the money that he fetches from the sale of that second animal will be considered general or common money, mundane funds. After all, he declared only one to be a sacrifice. Our problem here is that we don't know which one is the one to be determined as a sacrifice. So, to cover our bases, one he brings as an actual ola, and the other he sells to someone who will bring it as an ola. But he had really only dedicated one as a sacrifice, so the money that he gets for the second one can be used for any personal need. Yolda shtei nekevos, if it gave birth, the mother gave birth to two females, and we know that this person had said that if it gives birth to a female, he wants the offspring to be brought as a shlomim. Here it gave birth to two females. Achsmem tikrav shlomim, vashniot timocher lechayve shlomim. One he will offer as his own shlomim sacrifice, and the other one, the second one, he will sell to someone that needs to bring a shlomim. V'domel chulin, and the money that he gets will be chulin funds. Yaldo tumtum v'andreginis. If it gives birth to a tumtum, is a creature that whose gender is covered over. The organs of gender are covered, and therefore it's not clear what it is. Androgynous is a creature that has dual gender signs. Shimon Leil Omer, Ein Kedusha Chol Aleihem. Shimon Leil says that they have no sanctity. Before continuing in the Gemara, we glance at the outside margin under our No Say heading, and we've written Hatolas Mum Bevachor, the imposing of a blemish on a firstborn, koidem leidoso, before it's actually, before it emerges in birth, b'matora lafkia kedushoso, with the intention, with the goal of preventing sanctity from setting upon it. As we mentioned earlier, a firstborn male animal upon birth gains sanctity, and it is given to a Kohen, and in the time of the Beis HaMikdash it would be brought as a sacrifice, assuming that it was unblemished. If, however, something is done to the offspring, to the embryo, before it is born, that could prevent the Bechor status from setting upon it. Now, in our Mishnah we just saw quite a discussion about that, about imposing an alternative status to the as yet unborn animal, thereby preventing it from becoming a Bechor. The Gemara. Amar of Yehuda, Mutar Lahatil Mum Bechor Kodem Shietzi Lavir Oilam. Yehuda says that one is allowed to impose a blemish on the as yet unborn first one before it emerges. The Gemara asks a question. Tanan, quoting from our Mishnah, Oimer Adam, Ma Shebemeah Shelzu Oila. One can say about the as yet unborn, that which is inside, I want to declare as an Ola. Now, we want to infer Ola in Shlomim Lo. Regarding the unborn, well, we say, well, he can declare it as an Ola. That, yes. But he cannot declare it as a shlomim. In other words, if we're dealing with a male offspring, the only option available to the owner is, if he wants to prevent it from becoming a bechor, is to declare it an ola. An ola being a sacrifice has a very high level of sanctity to it. And what's significant about an ola is that it's a type of sacrifice that's completely burnt on the altar. So we're understanding things as of right now, that an Ola status can be imposed because that's an upgrading from what it otherwise would be, namely a Bechor. But to declare it a Shlomim, to declare a male unborn male offspring as a Shlomim, which is a lower level of sanctity, that would be usher. It would be usher to change the ultimate status of Bechor to Shlomim. Now, if that's prohibited, then certainly it would be prohibited to impose a blemish. By imposing a blemish on the as yet unborn animal, you're removing it from all sanctity altogether, which is worse than just downgrading sanctity from Bechor to Shlomim. But Shlomim anyway is something sanctified, is holy, and even though it's holy, nevertheless it's forbidden to downgrade it, so all the more so to impose a mum. So from our Mishnah, from the inference that we just derived from our Mishnah, we would conclude a major question on what Rav Yehuda is saying. Just reading the last couple words of the Gemara again, we say Ola in Shlomim Lo. Ola is the only option for the owner of the animal if he wants to divert it from becoming a Bechor, and not, he cannot impose shlomim status on it, then certainly he wouldn't be able to impose a blemish. And you, Rav Yud, are suggesting that the owner could remove it from kedusha through a kedusha from sanctity through a blemish. Omar loch Rav Yud. Rav Yud answers, "Hani mili, when is it that we are so restrictive when we say Olo yes, Shlomim no? That's bisman shebeis hamigdash kaim. That's when the temple was around. That was a time at which sacrifices could be brought, and we're interested in maintaining as high a level of sanctity with regard to sacrificial offerings. That's all fine and good when the beis hamigdash is around. Ki ko amino ano. When I said my point, namely imposition of a blemish, bisman." That's as far as nowadays are concerned, the lo chazi lahakrova, when it's not fit to be brought in the first place. There's no place to bring it. The Beis HaMikdash is in ruins. So being that the Beis HaMikdash is in ruins, I'm suggesting that you could prevent the Bechor status from setting upon it by imposing a blemish in initially. Well, the Gemara asks, e bizman hazeh mai lemeibra? If you're talking about nowadays, so then, well, what's the big deal? What's the point? What do I have to tell you that for? It should be obvious. It's obvious that there is no sacrificial consideration, so therefore, why not be able to impose a blemish before it's born? The Gemara answers, Mahu de Tema, without Rav Yehuda, one might have thought, Nigzar, let us restrict the imposition of a blemish, Dilma Nofik Roiv Roishoi Vikoshadi Beimuma. You might have a situation where the majority of the head of the animal emerged, and only then do you impose the blemish, and that would be forbidden, because upon Rov Rosho, the majority of the head emerging, at that point, the animal gains a Bechor status. Of course, even Bizman Hazeh, even nowadays, Bechor status is a reality, and there is a prohibition of imposing blemishes on animals that have sanctity, as is the case with the Bechor, even Bizman Hazeh. So if we were to give license to imposing blemishes, one might think that he could impose a blemish even after Rov Roshu emerges in it during its birth, and it's already too late at that point. The Gemara asks, V'eima hochinami? Well, why not be worried and say, let us impose such a restriction and not allow any blemish imposition? The Gemara answers, no, we will allow blemish imposition. Afilu hochi ho'adifa. This is a better approach. Mida'osi bei lidei gizov avoda. In other words, we're doing a cost-benefit type analysis here and saying that it's better to allow the imposition of mum nowadays, thereby preventing the Bechor status from setting upon, than us forbidding imposition of blemishes across the boards, which would then lead to the birth of an animal, which would have a Bechor status, and something like that, you have to leave around until it eventually develops a blemish. Well, during all of that time that it's around, one may come to forget himself and shear it or work with it, and those are strict, outright prohibitions. So that we'll take our chances, allow people to impose blemishes before the animal is born, realizing that someone could come to impose a blemish a little bit too late after Rov Roshu emerges, but that's a better course to take than to forbid blemish impositions across the board, thereby allowing regular firstborn animals to be born, leading to a whole time period in which people will have to be very careful not to shear nor work with those animals. Im nekeva zivchei shlomim. We were speaking about a person that owned an animal that had not given birth to any offspring yet, and he makes a declaration that if that which is inside it happens to be a shlomim, a female, then I want it to be a shlomim. But one second here. Isn't the topic at hand concerning prevention of Bechor status from setting upon an animal? A Bechor is a label that applies only to male offspring. Female offspring don't become Bechor in the first place. So why does he have to take any preemptive measure with regard to a female female fetus? the Gemara raises this point. Nekeva mi kokot shebimchora. Does a female child become sanctified with b'chor status in the first place? Why does he have to concern himself? Answer: Seifa asyo lebehemo dehektish. The Seifa is talking about an animal that has been sanctified as a sacrifice. For example, he had an animal that was designated as a sin offering, a chatos, and then the chatos became pregnant. Now, we know that if someone designated an animal as a sin offering and it then became pregnant, if that offspring is born, it's called a vlad chatos, and that's one of the examples of a chatos that are set aside to die. Now, you have an owner here that realizes that that could happen. He doesn't want the offspring to die. What can he do? He can change the status of this as yet unborn child of chatos, declare it a shlomim, and that will take hold. And what we realize here is that vlodos kochim, the offspring of sacrifices, gain their sanctity only upon birth and not while they're inside their mothers. So therefore, since they're still as yet unborn, they don't have the status of their mother. It's not called a vlad chatos yet. Therefore, he can impose upon it an alternative sanctity. And then when it is born, it's not born as a vlad chatos. It's born as a separate entity. It's born as a shlomim. So the simple point here is that this section of the Mishnah, which we saw him say if it's an akeva, it's a zifrishom, it's really a different case. It's a case of an animal. The mother is not a chulin animal with its firstborn on its way, but rather it is a chatos. The Gemara continues. Yolda Shnei Zechorim. Amri, I Behemo Dehektish. If, as you said, that we're talking about about an animal that has been sanctified as a sacrifice, so I don't understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah said that one of the offspring will be brought as his own Ola. The other one is sold as an Ola, and the money becomes Chulin. But if you're talking about a Behema de Hegdish, why do you say that the second animal is sold to people that require an Ola? Rather, Heich da'akdish ola lehevi ola. The first animal that he sanctified as an ola, so let it be an ola. Idach, the other one, nehevi, because you shall say, ti'ime. Let it have whatever sanctity the mother has. So the Gemara answers, Seifa asa'on lebehemas chulin. The Seifa, this last part of the Mishnah, is really reverting back to what the opening of the Mishnah was discussing, namely an unsanctified animal, a behemas chulin. We have a note to look at the Rabbeinu Gershom, and you'll find that on the bottom of the page. Seifa Ason Kan Yesh Kishte Shuos Cholok. He says the printer points out that there's some words missing in the Rabbeinu Gershom commentary, but we're saying the end is talking about Lebehemas Chulin, the end of the Mishnah, Ukagon, Delo Yedia Ahe Zohar Minohu Omar Ola. We don't know which one of the two male offsprings he said would be an Ola. Hilkoch Sheni Yimocher Litzorche Olos. The second one must be sold to someone who needs an Ola. V'damav Chulin Kidamon Le'el, as we said earlier. Mishnah goes on to speak about the birth of a Tumtum and Androgynous, but Amirz Hashem, this will be picked up, we'll pick up with this during our next Shiur. So with that, we conclude our Shiur for today.